there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shouldn't you be at work?
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I'll have a low-fat pizza or something like that, or a few biscuits and some milk on a Sunday.
And you can pair up if you like, and you can fucking pick someone else to help you, and you can bring your fucking dinner.
Panister and Bruce in the queue again. Bruce scores! Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Tony Hatton!
No!
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin Willie Score. I'm Chris Gold. Joining me, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And the man who recently had his garden fence kicked in by Tamori Ketsbier, it's Michael Marden.
Hello.
You look a bit like Ketsbier. I never thought of that.
Oh, come on, mate.
That's lazy.
That is lazy.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a shaved man. Would you recognise him if you walked in? Not if you walked in, but like if you're in a shop.
I think the problem is I'd recognise him if he looked like he did then.
No, well, yeah. Have you seen pictures of Ketsbier now?
No.
He's got a huge afro.
No, yeah.
Huge. Yes. Do you know what? I'm always surprised. You know, like footballers who are continually bald, and then it turns out they can grow hair. Like Paul Konchesky is an example of that.
What? That's a decision.
So his whole career was bald, and now he's retired. He's got hair.
Wow.
I find that fascinating.
That is weird.
I shaved my head long before I receded.
Yeah.
But I sort of lament it now. It's a good few years I could have with hair. It's too late now.
So, thank you to everyone who has bought tickets to our show at Salford Lowry. I'm not going to lie to you. We're recording this before they went on sale, so I can't tell you how tickets have gone. But if it has sold, then thank you for buying tickets. If no one's bought a ticket yet, we're in serious trouble. If you want to buy tickets for that, all you need to do is go on to the Salford Lowry website, and they are available there. Now, this week we are joined by the fantastic Max Rushton from Guardian Football Weekly podcast. He is talking about Cambridge United, John Beck. It was a lovely, lovely chat. But before that, I've got some correspondence.
You've got mail.
Thank you for all the great correspondence. As always, we're falling behind with the amount of good stuff. However, hold on to your hats. Chris Tate has something to tell us. Hi, chaps. You've probably come across this before, but I stumbled upon this article and comment online. I'm going to tell you now, we haven't come across this before. The image is from an online review, right, of Steve Bruce's striker. Okay? So this is a new story from 1999, September the 4th, 1999. The headline, Bruce set to thrill with killer stories. Steve Bruce, Huddersfield's town manager, has branched into literature and written a novel, Striker, which tells the tale of a retired footballer, Steve Barnes, who manages the fictional Leddersford Town. Quote, Steve's not T.S. Eliot or Samuel Beckett, but the book's a damn good read, Reggie Sharp of the publisher's Paragon Press said. It's full of twists and turns, excitement and cliffhangers, he added. Sharp said that the book will appeal to anyone from 14 to 56, men or women.
It's very specific.
Yeah.
What happens at 57? That means you're not interested in that.
So specific.
The 128-page Striker is to be released on the 17th of December and will be, according to Sharp, the first of three novels in the next 4 months by the former Manchester United defender, who's currently the First Division's Manager of the Month. Striker involves the murder of a young player, and our hero, Barnes, becomes the chief suspect. Next week, we'll reveal more. Bet you can't wait about the plots of the next two books, Sweeper and defender. I'm not sure what this publication is. However, you think that I'm reading it out just because of that? No. That news story has a comment underneath. Anonymous said, all three books, Striker, Sweeper and Defender, were published by Paragon Publishing in Huddersfield. They were written by the owner of the company, a guy called Reggie Sharp.
What?
A former headmaster who was trying to make money as a publisher. He was an obnoxious man who bordered on arrogant to most people who met him. He wrote each book in about 3 days and then had them printed. Steve Bruce had nothing to do with any of them. I doubt he even read them because they were real drivel. I think he got paid £2,000 for having his name and image on each book and attending a book signing at Waterstones in Huddersfield. I know this because I played a part in converting the text files from MS Word format, which Reggie Sharp wrote them in, to Apple Mac formats for printing, which at the time was the only way most print houses worked. On the second book cover, Reggie appears in the picture as janitor with a sweeping brush. The whole affair was a money-making scheme designed to sell Paragon books. Bruce was nothing but a paid figurehead whose fame was used to create awareness. But I think the sales were poor and only a few hundred fans parting with their money. The rest of the copies were pulped, I believe. Sorry to shatter people's images of Steve, the author, but it wasn't. You were all conned.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, we don't know if that's true or not. That's literally someone's comment on the internet.
Yeah, we're not saying that's fact. That feels like the twist at the start of the third act that precedes the final twist. That actually, if you trace the IP address of the person who wrote that comment, it was Steve Bruce deflecting.
The dugout at James's Park.
Steve Bruce, yeah.
There is a couple of things that happen in that book that make you think maybe it wasn't Steve Bruce. The formations not being anything like normal formations.
Yeah.
As someone who's not into football.
I don't know. I think there's enough inside knowledge of the game that I don't think I could have written it.
I think perhaps there's a middle ground here.
Steve Bruce has denied it. Like no, not denied, like he has written the books and just said they're rubbish.
Well,
why would he do that?
The search goes
on. Is he still protecting Reggie? There's a whole book in this.
If you have any more information on Reggie Sharp, Paragon Press, Steve Bruce, who wrote anything, please do get in touch.
Would you? I don't know if I'd want it to be Steve Bruce or not. Like if it came,
I want it to be. Yeah.
If it came out that it wasn't him, if we uncovered some evidence, I'd be tempted to bury the evidence.
I think it'd be a shame if it wasn't Steve Bruce.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the Jebediah Springfield episode of The Simpsons? Yeah. When she finds out that he's a bad guy, but she doesn't tell the town because the symbol of Jebediah Springfield means more than the truth. Yeah.
Lovely 90s reference.
I think the symbol of Steve Bruce means more. Okay. Hi, guys. My girlfriend was checking her voicemails and asked me why I'd been repeatedly saying a man's name on a pocket call voicemail she had been left from myself. What was the name, I hear you ask? The name was Eddie McGoldrick. Please find attached a video of my pocket call to her while singing the Eddie McGoldrick song, driving around Asda car park in Poole. Keep up the good work, Callum.
It's one of the weirder pieces of correspondence we've ever got.
So he's driving around singing Eddie McGoldrick to himself when he mistakenly left a voicemail for his girlfriend. Who's then just the image of having to explain why he kept saying Eddie McGoldrick.
Do you know Southampton fans have a bit of a calling card when they go away to away games? They leave stickers of Francis Benali in the toilets in this pub. What if people just like left Eddie McGoldrick? There was just little Eddie McGoldrick, just maybe written on a park bench or the inside of a gents' loo.
I'll have some stickers printed up with Eddie McGoldrick's Eddie face. McGoldrick's hashtag face. Quickly Kevin.
Yeah.
If you can, not that we're encouraging people to. I don't know if that's defacing or littering or whatever it is, but
improving.
Could we make packets of 20 stickers of Eddie McGoldrick that we could sell on our shop, and then people could just whatever they wanted to do with them would be fine.
Yeah,
it's out of our control at that point.
Yes.
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay. Hans Sager's tie sideline update. This is from Thomas Newton. He originally sent us the still of the advertising board.
Right.
Having sent you the original still of Hans Sager's tie advertising board, Soho's Park, I have managed to identify the phone number.
Oh.
Hello. How's he done that? Has he worked for like...
You can see it. You can see it. I was looking at it and he is right. It's either 0252-629-334 or 0752-629-334.
Okay.
So what would that phone number be now? Would there be a 1 before the 2? Right. What is 0252 as a phone number?
I don't know.
Didn't we once... We had your copy of the World Cup 1990 magazine. It had the telephone number for the Cameroon Football Association.
Yeah.
And we called it. And obviously it just went dead.
It went nowhere. Yeah.
So I don't know what those numbers are, but should I just try calling one?
Yeah. Go on then.
Don't, make sure you don't get the fax.
It's one number short. No, nothing. It hasn't come up. So if anyone can identify those phone numbers and say that whether there is a number that would go in there,
yeah,
on 0252 629 334 or on 0752 629 334, please get in touch, because if we can get hold of Hans Sager's phone number, it would be well worth phoning up.
There is absolutely no chance whatsoever Hans Sager's is going to be in at the end of that line.
Well, the best case scenario is that somewhere in a garage lockup there is a big box of dead stock of Hans Sager's ties that we could buy off him and then redistribute to the world. So if anyone out there, Hans, anyone that knows Hans knows.
Imagine if we phoned up and they went, "Hello, Hans Sager's."
And it's just like really bustling in the background. Yeah, yeah. You hear hundreds of other operatives.
You want 1,000 Cantonars? Yeah, sure.
Press 1 for orders over 1,000 ties.
One final thing on the subject of Eddie McGoldrick. So 22 years after hanging up his boots, it would appear Alvin Martin is back in people's consciousness. Why, Chris?
Well, his son is now in goal for West Ham.
Correct. However, the return of Alvin into the limelight reminded me of a similar case to Josh's Eddie McGoldrick earworm that he mentioned a few seasons ago. Whenever Alvin Martin was mentioned on TV in the 90s, I couldn't help but include his name in the final line of the catchy theme tune to Alvin and the Chipmunks. Yes. So we're the Chipmunks, coming on stronger than ever before. We're the Chipmunks, Alvin Martin Theodore. Yes. That is from Andrew Rees. If you have any more correspondence, this is how you get in touch.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list at quicklykevin.com.
Right, often my favourite episodes are where people just talk about their club that we didn't know much about in the 90s. We had Ellis James talking about Swansea City.
Yeah.
Tom Parry on Wolves. And now, the greatest period in the history of Cambridge, the greatest hot streak of any weird manager ever, John Beck. This is Max Rushton. Today's guest is Max Rushton, the sound of weekend mornings on TalkSport, the host of the superb Guardian Football Weekly, the Tommy Cannon to Barry Glendening's Bobby Ball, and most importantly, Cambridge United's most famous fan.
Well,
fair?
Mark Saggers. Half of Groove Armada.
Half of Groove Armada.
Groove Armada's two people, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So right. One of the people from
so
Groove
one of
Armada.
The two. It's still half.
Is it
the
Groove?
Half is the it's Jeff Armada. Half is the correct fraction.
Well, Max, we're here to talk about the 90s to some extent.
Yeah.
Have you ever met a 90s footballer? Of course you have. But any particular footballer stick out?
Oh, wow.
Do you remember the first footballer you met?
I'll tell you a story. So I think it might have been the second season of Soccer AM, at the end of the season. Cammy came up to me and said, "Listen, we're doing a charity do in Tenerife and Jeff Stelling can't make it. Do you want to come?" And
at least he was honest about why you're on the invite.
I'm never first choice. I understand that.
Get off the bench.
I'm only here because half of Groove Armada couldn't make it. I'm aware of that. And I was like, well, I haven't got much on, you know, just got one more show of the season and then I got 2 months off. Why don't I go? But I remember I roomed with Ian Dowie.
Wow.
Once of this parish.
Yeah.
This is had him on.
Yeah. Lovely guy, isn't
lovely
he?
Lovely bloke.
But he was sort of giddy with excitement and we were rooming together and on the first morning, it was like the golf day and I was asleep and he burst into my room in a pair of sort of black tight pants going, "Come on!" like this. And I said, "Ian, I don't think you should ever begin anyone's morning." And then that evening, he spent quite a lot of the time when we were getting ready just sort of naked with a towel over his shoulder saying, you're out with the party meister now. And then the next morning, I was in the shower. You can imagine.
And was it a dangerous place to be?
I mean, I just couldn't. Even though I'm probably 15 years younger than all these guys, I just couldn't. Mm. I just couldn't hack the pace.
Yeah.
You know.
And can you see him now, naked? If you close your eyes.
Yes.
You were very excited about doing a podcast about 94.
Can I say I think this is such a brilliant podcast, and I'm not just saying that to sort of curry favour early on.
It has worked.
And so many
Ian Dowie didn't open with
it. No, did he not?
Come on.
He was naked with a towel over his shoulder. So many people told me, you've got to listen to this podcast, and I didn't get round to it. A, because there's a lot of true crime, right? and B, I was just lazy or fearful that it might be better than any of the podcasts that I'm on. So I'm a bit behind. But it's essentially, this is my entire childhood. I'm sure people who love this pod, you know, really feel this as their... So I'm a bit behind. So you've just announced a pub quiz at the Hackney Picture House in 2017. I can't make it. And I'm really sorry about that. But I wanted to...
It was too difficult.
Do you know what? To be honest, the quizzes are difficult, I think. Or I find I don't have enough time to answer before you buzzed in. If I was making technical criticisms...
I mean, that can join a long list of criticisms.
It's great fun to be able to criticise a pod and not be on the end of that. Listening to this pod makes me think of my childhood. Can I describe my childhood bedroom?
Please.
I took some notes. I took some notes for my
childhood. When you were a child?
I didn't take the notes then. Just on the off chance I'd be on a podcast about this later. So I had... I was mainly shoot, but yes. I wasn't a snob about match.
I think it's more highbrow though.
I think so. And it had the league ladders. It had, you know, it had much more about it. So I had, I had football posters all over my bedroom. It didn't. It was not team related.
Oh, so you just put any up?
Literally, John Ebrill, don't care. Paul Davis, you know,
other teams. Just...
Any team photos. Scottish football. I didn't care. And I had a selection of Cambridge and Tottenham kits. Basically, my dad's a big Tottenham fan, and they're my big team who win things. That'll get some abuse, and it's fine. I've been through that. And I had my little bed, and then I had a camp bed underneath. So I would drag that mattress out, put it on the other side of the room. And the room was not big, but when you're 10, it was quite big. And I put that mattress on the floor where the radiator was at the other. And out of football posters, I made a little goal, right? So there was a little goal out of football posters. And then if just one friend was staying the night, like Matthew or Clive, we would play like headers and volleys. So one of us would be on the mattress in goal. Yeah. And the other would, with a sponge football, would throw it against the wall and just do headers and volleys.
I used to do that off the wall.
Yeah, so I was I am to this day much better at heading a ball coming... sort of from the left wing and the right wing. So I had that sort of practice. And then if Matthew and Clive stayed over, we'd do aggressive headers and volleys. So you'd have two attacking the ball.
You'd have two attacking
the ball? The amount of time, the room was not big, and the amount of times we headbutted each other. And we'd be doing this at 2 in the morning, and then my dad, you'd hear the sound of, he'd put his sandals, you'd hear these sort of jingly jangle sandals, and then we'd all just jump into bed as if we were asleep and the noise had been coming from somewhere else, not the room above his. And he would send them home because they lived down the road
at
2 a.m. but if George or Tom were staying over because they lived on the other side of Cambridge, they would just get told off.
Yeah.
So then I had at the turn of the decade, I would say there was an Amstrad CPC 6128 built-in disk drive.
Oh.
Yeah, lovely. Good. And I would say early 90s, I traded up to an Amiga 500. Yes. Eventually got the Megabyte upgrade, which changed the noise of when you hit the post on kickoff 2.
Was that the 500 plus?
No, that wasn't the... The 500 with the Megabyte upgrade was not the 500 plus. And I traded straight up to an A1200. And
I had the A1200. Did you, Ryan?
I was a 500 plus guy. I was one of those mugs. Okay. Yeah.
What a loser. You're with the party meister now. You're going to raise your Amiga game. And just to set the scene finally, in the video, and I reckon we got a video recorder around that time, I had a blank video in the VHS at all times, and when there were any goals, I would record them. So I made my own sort of goals compilation videos.
Oh, wow.
And it would be a sort of collection of Anglia News, Look East, Saint and Greavesy and Transworld Sport. And at the time, you never really knew when football was on.
Made it into a one long goals compilation. Transworld Sport, which I don't think we've discussed.
Amazing.
I used to watch on a Saturday morning.
I think, yeah.
And it was... Now, having worked in TV, I understand that its content was mainly dictated by rights issues. At the time, it felt like their editorial policy was insane.
But you know, but the thing was with Transworld Sport, right, was you'd be watching, I don't know, it would be doing baseball, and then you just, I would just be like, please be football. And then it would just go, shoo, kabaddi. And you'd be like, okay, I'll sit through this, but the next one better be football. And it was just, it was a, such a random, the guy had so such a great voice.
Yeah, I met that guy.
Stop
it. I worked on some Dubai powerboat racing, and this guy ran the company, and he had that voice. I recognised the voice before I realised who he was.
Amazing.
Such
amazing.
A silky tone.
I would love those. I'd love to see those, because they're so badly edited.
Yeah.
And sort of, I didn't have iMovie.
Have you got the videos?
I mean, I have no idea. They may be in a box at my parents' house.
I told you that I taped the 1998 World Cup.
All of it.
Have I told you that?
No.
Presumably on long play.
Oh, yes.
So
lovely.
I think because I wanted, I think it was probably symbolically an attempt to keep hold of the sands of time.
Yeah.
But Hammond, you're quite old in 98.
15.
Oh, okay, 15, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, you're a little bit younger than I'm, 40.
And I had a job as a kitchen porter at the local hotel, which paid for me to buy the blank tapes.
Wow.
So I had all of the tapes of every single game.
I can't believe we're 2.5 years into this, and this is the first time this has come. I've been trawling YouTube for clips. You sat at home somewhere in Devon.
There's... No, but what clips do you want? Clips of Nigeria versus Greece in the group stage of the 1998 World Cup.
There'll be some gold from Dez in there. There'll be all sorts.
The thing is, I would absolutely... You would... Because don't you find... I wake up, and then I put the telly on, and it's, you know, Premier League years, 1995. Mm-hmm. And an hour later, I'm like, why? Like, I know what happens in this. I know that Paul Stalteri scores in the last minute. What am I doing? And I'm engaged, but I'm like, God, I better win this.
One of the most exciting things I've ever watched was I watched on the BBC Parliament channel. I was off ill one day, and they were rerunning like the 1963 election or something, and I didn't know the result. It's so exciting.
I hope just before that came on, I hope before the 10-hour coverage, they said, and if you don't want to know the world, look away now.
So, before we start, we normally have our settling questions. Have you met a 90s footballer?
Yeah.
Specific games or rules, we've actually covered that. I've written a new question.
Okay, right. Okay.
Which I want to ask all fans of lower league teams. What was the half-time entertainment like in the 90s at Cambridge United?
I mean, I think it was virtually non-existent. So the excitement was the half-time scores from Division 1, right? Or the Premier League, because nobody had a smartphone or anything.
Phone,
it was like, oh, wow, Arsenal are losing. That was like the big thing. More recently, so not in the 90s, so forgive me again. We have been sponsored for quite a long time by a skip company.
Yeah.
And so it's kick a ball into a skip.
We saw that at Peterborough.
Yeah, they're sponsored by the same... A real skip.
Yeah,
like the youth team.
The youth team
had to carry on an actual skip.
Like, at half-time, onto the pitch.
Some physios have stopped, you know, underage teams doing deadlifts. You shouldn't be bringing on a skip unless you've properly warmed up.
So what does that do to the pitch?
So many questions. So yeah, half-time was just, as far as I can remember, and I hate half-time. I hate throw-ins and half-time.
Throw-ins?
Yeah. I don't know why, I just don't.
Find them boring.
Yeah, find them boring, yeah.
Half-time, what did you do at half-time?
Well, we used to play, sorry to interrupt, we used to play What Advertising Hoarding Am I Thinking Of?
Sega's
ties. I'm a huge fan of the bad advertising hoarding, and also the, you know, the sponsorship page on the players, especially
the
John Filan was sponsored just by, you know, Jim and Margaret Matthews of Gosport. It wasn't even a company, you know. That's how shit we were.
The thought of sponsoring a player or a match, just absolutely no interest.
I think I sponsored Tom Champion.
Did you?
For a year or two. Yeah.
What, his kit or the,
I think
the
I
man?
Sponsored his kit. I don't think I sponsored him personally. I think I paid £400.
Yeah.
And what do you get for that money? Is
you
it like
get the kit?
I think I did get sent it once. It was a bit small for me.
Does he write like letters to you, like if you sort of adopt an animal in a zoo?
Here's
like,
how I'm doing.
Weekly updates.
You're like the friend of the Cyprus donkey. You get an update. I didn't get many Tom Champion updates. No.
So let's go back to the start of the 90s.
Right,
Cambridge. Well, so let's start by going back to You started going in 1986.
Yeah.
What was the club like at that point?
I think my first game was 85 or 86, and so I was 6 or 7. So I wasn't really across how the club was being run, if I'm honest. Yeah. But my whole memories of it are the smell of cigarettes, because I'd never really smelt a cigarette. There were no cigarettes in my household. And, like, real swearing.
Yeah.
Because my house was a sort of bloody bugger
house.
That was the... There were no F's or C's. My dad, I have once heard my dad use the C word when someone ran in front of the car, and then he very quickly said, "I said clot." So my real memories of it were the size of it at the time was just extraordinary. Obviously, it goes on too long for a seven-year-old football.
Yeah.
So I don't think I lasted.
Yeah.
I was there until the end, but I was only there in body, not in mind.
Yeah.
But Steve's...
Was the Abbey Stadium, was it a good stadium?
I don't think anyone has used that adjective
for it before.
So the junior use enclosure, the seats were sort of, it was just a long bit of wood with like little ridges either side. So there was no sort of back to those chairs.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at the North Terrace and just thinking, that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And thinking that is like, that is the best of human life. Like, that is the zenith. You cannot... What a place that must be.
What age did you graduate?
I reckon I graduated from the junior youth enclosure to the North Terrace when I was about 15, I would say. And when you're in it and it's full, you think, this is like the Cop. But what you don't realise is it doesn't even go the entire width of the pitch. Like, the disabled enclosure takes up at least a third of that side of the pitch. Yeah. So you're in a tiny little shed. And when we stood there, there were like, in front of us were like five people in leather jackets who looked like Fox Mulder's nerdy friends in the X-Files. And the only thing they'd ever say is, whenever we got a corner, they'd go, "We never score from corners." And they were right. We were too scared to go right middle at the back.
That's the stadium, right? In 86, you started going. 84, you went 31 games without a victory. So what's the state of the football you're watching at this point?
So that's the chapter in Fever Pitch.
Yeah. Right?
It's an amazing chapter of any book. And I'm sort of sad that Derby County took that mantle. You know how like Ipswich fans were desperate for Leicester to beat Southampton 10-0? And I was like, why? That is a badge of honour. I mean, the standard of football was not great. But, you know, at that time, you know, there were like fat players, and there were like really short, sort of like inappropriately short players, and like players who definitely just would have a cigarette at half time. It was a different beast. It was just totally different, and obviously the quality of the football didn't really register. Like obviously growing up, John Beck played and actually was like an incredibly cult. He was like Glenn Hoddle for Division Four.
Well, that's so often the case.
I know, he was
with
such,
George Graham as well.
It's a genius of a footballer, you know, in those terms. Yeah. But obviously, I grew up with this meteoric rise, and I just presumed this was how you played football.
Yeah.
I had no concept really that there were other types of football. I was like, you know, like this, and it worked right. It just we had 2 years of sort of tedium and nothing. But this worked.
So let's get on to the arrival of John Beck.
Okay.
John Beck, so when he's appointed, you don't care, presumably.
Not even, probably didn't even notice. We're 17th or 18th in Division 4, something like that.
So for people who don't know, let's run through John Beck's style. How would you describe his style of play?
I think the best way to describe it is we beat Bristol City 5-1 in the second replay of the fifth round of the FA Cup in 1990. And there was a pitch invasion. I was on the pitch.
And
John Beck is interviewed as fans are coming up and kissing him. And, you know, the interviewer is saying, you know, "How is that for you?" And I think his second sentence was, "Some of our channel balls were magnificent." I mean, that is just heaven, isn't it? So his thinking was, and I actually think quite a lot of League Two football is probably still like this, and he was thinking was, if the ball is up their end more often than it isn't, we'll get a lot of second balls and we'll score goals. And if you get a couple of quick wingers and you put it in the box and you get two big strikers, you'll score a lot of goals. And if you work really hard. And that's what he got. He built this team of actually really quite, technically quite good footballers, actually, who quite a lot of them went on to much better things. But he put them in this system that was absolutely unstoppable until people realised how to stop it. And then it, and then it was really stoppable.
So he took, let's to give you an idea of the success, he, when he took over, you were mid-table in Division 4.
Yeah.
And that was January 1990.
Yeah, so we won the playoffs that year.
And when he left, October 92, so what's that, 2.5 years later, you had recently lost in the semi-finals of the playoffs to get into what is now the Premier League. What was then the first Premier League?
It would have been the first year of the Premier League. And in that season, and I might be wrong about this, this is how I remember it, Newcastle equalised in the 94th minute at St James's Park. And we would have won that game. Mm. And we had a goal disallowed at Ayresome Park. Neil Heaney, who was a really good left winger, came from Arsenal, I think. Yeah, a lovely footballer. He scored a goal at Ayresome Park. It was disallowed for no reason. And I think if that goal is allowed and the Newcastle goal isn't allowed, I think we get automatic promotion. Please don't check. Please don't check. Because that's how... we probably finished like 30 points off the playoffs. But we were so unbelievably close to getting into the Premier. And that is our only chance. We'll never have that chance.
But Wimbledon did a very similar... Yeah. Had a very similar philosophy. So was it that philosophy just worked then? In these leagues at this time?
I've read up on John Beck, and there's an argument that he was the most thoughtful and intelligent manager in the lower leagues. Because although you're playing a rudimentary style, he's the only person who's thinking about it mm-hmm. and thinking of doing something different in the same way that someone playing... You know, Pep Guardiola
is changing
the way football's perceived. He's not just another lower league manager. He's someone who's gone, I've studied this, and you can do it. Do you know what I mean?
I think he once got a scientist. I remember a TV interview where there's a scientist next to him with doing numbers and brackets
in a white coat.
And matrices.
Plenty knocking about Cambridge.
Yeah, of course. They're like 10 a penny. But I think you're right. And I think a lot of League Two managers probably now, and certainly then Division Four managers, would be like, mainly fullbacks hit it down the channels, get a flick on. But if you can get it into the centre mid quickly, do it. But he never wanted that. You know, there is this great story that, you know, Steve Claridge was going down the right wing and cut inside 20 minutes in and created a great chance, and he was subbed. Because your right winger was to get to the byline and put the ball in. I don't want you cutting inside. You know, he was that diligent.
So, let's go back to the start.
Okay.
Before the first season you get promoted in the playoffs at Wembley. Did you go to Wembley?
Yeah. So it was the first...
What was that experience like?
The first ever... playoff final at Wembley. It had never been at Wembley before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the first year.
So where was it before then?
I think they either did two leg games or they just had them at, I don't know, the Vetch Field. They just picked somewhere random and small. For lower league fans, there is nothing like your team being on Wembley Way. You just cannot explain it because you've seen it on TV so much and you've seen all these big teams be there. But when you get off the tube and you get to, and you just see that, like, heart, your colours are there. You can't... Whenever you're there, it's just... When you get in and Wembley's half empty, it's a bit sad. But...
but that way, just, you can feel the way.
Oh, you can feel the way.
And feel it is, the way.
Don't you think, Joe? I just think that's just...
It's amazing.
Most amazing moment. I don't really remember anything about the game. I remember we won.
Who did you play?
We played Chesterfield.
Oh, yeah,
and Dion scored from a Chris Leadbitter corner midway through the second half. So that was unbelievable. It was a... Just being at Wembley, it was totally. It was like otherworldly.
Did you get like the flag and the? I remember when Argyle went to Wembley in '96. I got the green wig, and the
classic,
the classic green wig and the flag that you wear. And I remember I had that flag on my wall. You don't get that with West Ham or Man U.
My parents agreed that I could paint my room yellow with black. sort of trim, but it never happened. It was a great shame. I was
like,
really
that's
wanted
the kind
that.
Of thing they do in an away dressing room to put them off.
Yeah, well,
I mean, which is another John Beck.
Well, he used to. I mean, you can come to that now.
Let's come to John Beck's tactics.
Amazing. So John Beck, first of all, if it was summer, he put the heating on absolutely full in the away dressing room, so it was absolutely boiling. And if it was winter, he would turn it off. The other thing he did, right? Because
I also like to think that that's him doing it. Like, literally.
Yeah.
Turning the knob.
Also, would you hide the thermostat? Like, I've read this. How you'd have to make it so that they couldn't change it themselves.
Maybe he had Hive. He had a first. He's the first ever incarnation of Hive. The other thing he did was on away games, you obviously got half the pitch to warm up on. And so if we were playing a team that played decent football, he would bring our under-18s to have an 11-a-side game on the pitch. Just cut it up.
And a skip as well.
Yeah,
that's mad,
so
isn't
good,
it?
Isn't it?
And there was sad. So getting annoyed at this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Glenn Hoddle, in sort of the later years when he was Swindon manager, absolutely hated us. I mean, you can understand why, right?
Yeah. It's silky hated football, the opposite it's philosophy.
And they beat us 3-0 in the FA Cup, I think, in the season where Beck lost his job. And I think it's probably Glenn Hoddle's highest point in football. I would suggest. But he used to. There was so much sand. If you watch in the 91 fifth round, we beat Sheffield Wednesday 4-0.
Yeah, I've watched that.
Amazing. And the pitch, I mean, it looks like Warbiswick or South Wales. It was like a beach. And also, he got big billboards with the word quality in amber and black, right?
Yeah.
And they were put in the corner of each pitch so that our fullbacks could look up and just ping it to quality, right?
why does it say quality?
Well, like, because some of our channel balls were magnificent. What a ludicrous question. And the ball would just land in the sand. You know, it was sort of like hitting a sand. It was like hitting a pitching wedge, literally, or a sandwich. They would stop, and then we would, the high press. We invented the high press, but on a beach.
I wonder what it's like being the groundsman. And because you're working against your natural instincts.
So, Ian Darler, who's been the groundsman at Cambridge United for so long, and the Cambridge United pitch is absolutely beautiful, he got a signed letter, sort of a waiver from John Beck, to sort of say, this is not my doing.
Like, genuinely,
you know, he sort of said, look, I will prepare the pitch like this, but I just don't want anyone to, this is not my work. You know, it's like Picasso doing commissions he didn't want people to know about, right? Isn't that amazing?
So good. Should we just watch, there's a good, is this the one with the interview at the end? I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
When Cambridge reached the sixth round as a fourth division club last season, well, it could have been put down as a fluke. When they then won promotion in the playoffs, suggested there might well be something here. And now, here they are. 4-0 in front as Dublin takes another gift from a terrible back pass, this time by Danny Wilson. The rout is complete. 4-0 and Cambridge are into the sixth round for the second successive season.
And the heroes of the hour, Dion Dublin, the goal scorer, John Beck, the manager. Congratulations. A lot of people might have thought you'd have beaten Wednesday at home because you've got a tremendous record of late, but 4-0's a thumping, John.
That's right. We played extremely well and it's kept the cup fever going, and the city is a little bit of a sleepy town. It's a bit of a university town and it's nice to keep the run going.
This is before, and I think you were going to bring this up, this is before he moved the away dugout essentially to the corner flag.
Yes,
so they couldn't see half the pitch.
So he moved the away dugout further down.
It was basically on Coldham's Common. It was like outside the stadium.
Is that allowed?
Well, I don't know. I have no idea. So Des Lynham, so Beck and Dion are in the Match of the Day studio. That was mind-blowing. Right, yeah. The thought of having your player and your manager next to Des Lynham, right? It was unbelievable. And you wonder if Dion was like, oh, I want to go out with the lads. It's an extension of the...
What people don't know is the producer match there in the 90s went on to produce Holmes Under the Hammer. So in the long in the long game, Dion made the right decision.
And, you know, we all sang the user going up. And then we went on to win the third division then. And we were like, this is... Well, I mean, I sort of thought this is what happened every year. I just presume there weren't enough divisions. Eventually, we'd run out of divisions to get promoted from.
Could I take you through a few more John Beckisms check them?
Hmm.
He used to put loads of sugar in the opposition's half-time tea. Did you know this?
I've heard that one.
I would think this would, like, gee them up. They'd have full of, like, carbs and be, like, really energised.
Yeah, but you'd get, you know, if you do it at the start of half-time, you get a sugar rush and then you crash start of the second half.
But also, that's implying that the tea sugar isn't done by the individual, but he's sugaring the full vat.
The big can. Yeah.
Also, if the dugout's down by the corner flag and the change room is freezing, I am not drinking the tea.
Also, he handed the visitors uninflated balls for the warm-up. Oh, so brilliant. Add for their...
You know, is it, if you think, you know, when they talk about Jose at Tottenham, they say, if you go with him,
yeah,
you go with him, right? Yeah. And you will be successful. And, you know, Claridge rebelled against the system.
Yeah.
And, you know, and John Beck did not like that. They didn't get along.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of when it fell apart.
Yeah.
That we weren't winning. And then I remember overnight he said, we're going to play football. And Phil Chappell got the ball and side-footed it to our right back. And there was this sort of ovation. It was just like this, the first side foot pass for like 4 years. It was like this unbelievable moment for all of us. Like, you know, because my dad grew up watching Tottenham in the 50s and the 60s, right? He talks about Jimmy Greaves all the time. And then he was watching this for years. And he just sort of fainted at this moment. Can I tell this is a very Cambridge-based story. So before the quarterfinal in 1990 against Crystal Palace, where once again we were robbed.
So you got to two FA Cup
two in a row, yeah. But my dad didn't have a ticket. And so he rang on the morning of the game. He just rang the club and said, I haven't got a ticket. I've been going for 15, 20 years. Can you get me one? And they were like, oh, yeah, yeah, here's one. So they went, yeah, I've got you one. And it was in the press box. And my dad would always take a book in case he got bored.
what kind of book?
So my dad... I am, just to be clear, I'm a man of the people, but my dad was reading Plato's Republic. And so he sat in the press box, and I have a signed copy of Plato's Republic by Trevor Brooking.
Oh, wow. That's on brand for Brooking.
That is amazing. Wow. So you got to two quarterfinals, yeah, in the FA Cup. Yeah. Then you get into Division 2, which is now the Championship.
Yeah.
And do you think at that point we're going straight up again?
Well, obviously, because I was only 11 and we just kept winning. Yeah,
You're top until December 22nd.
Oh, God. It's just so depressing. Because you know how if your team wins, you can look at that page, the league table page, for days.
Yeah.
And, you know, and also, you know, you look at that page. If you've got a game in hand, that's automatically a win. It's not even... There's no point playing the game. You've won that. And just when I see old Division 2 tables and you look at the teams that we are above.
Blackburn, Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah. And you're just like...
Middlesbrough.
And it was just... It's just sad to think that, you know, that was our...
I remember you coming to Argyle that season. We went down that season.
But who, did you have Mick Heath... You'll never meet Mick Heathcote at that time.
No, that was
time.
Later. Was on. Later. That was nice. So we had... David Kemp for the first half of the season, then we had Peter Shilton.
Okay.
Which was a similar...
Brexit's Peter Shilton.
Brexit's Peter Shilton.
The best thing about Peter Shilton's Brexit tweets is the next tweet down is Peter Reid going, wind it in, Shilton.
So Shilton was the manager of Plymouth. When he took over, Kemp was from a very similar school to John Beck.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shilton took over, and there was a similar thing where the goalie rolled the ball out to the right back.
Wow.
And there was a cheer because it had never happened. But we lost 1-0 on a Tuesday night against you. And the two things I vividly remember is there was about... Still, because you were top, you had like 40 or 50 fans in this away end.
So that's a good effort for us.
Because you were, by distance, the smallest team.
Yeah.
And also I remember Dion Dublin played for you. I'd read in Shoot or whatever, this guy was like the king of the lower leagues. Was he like the best player?
Well, I always thought John Taylor was better. Because John Taylor was more experienced... When we had him,
he did some good stuff in Duran, didn't he? So what happened to John Taylor?
Well, John Taylor went to Bristol Rovers when we got Devon White. It was a total disaster.
And
he came back late 90s, and we had the sort of tiny renaissance with Roy McFarlane, and him and Trevor Benjamin and Martin Butler had this sort of three-way axis, and that was quite fun.
But he never did what Dion did.
No, he never did what he never did. What
was Dion amazing?
He was, but even still, £1 million. We were just... The thought of our player going for £1 million was just too much. But Man United only signed Cantona because Dion broke his leg.
Is that right?
Well, that's what I tell myself.
That has got to be rubbish.
I don't want any fact-checking below the line on this.
So, 92, you finish fifth, get to the playoffs, and that's your highest ever league finish. This is the peak of Cambridge, 92.
So I went to the home leg, and we drew 1-1 with Leicester, but they were good, and I think we got a late equaliser. Danny O'Shea scored. I remember listening on the radio to Leicester, basically. They hammered us 5-0,
5-1.
5-0. And that was it, basically. That's it. I mean, that was it, because then...
And then John Beck sacked by October.
I mean, that is unbelievable, isn't it?
It's mad.
Two successive promotions, nearly get the third, and he's gone.
Did it just all collapse?
I think it all collapsed, and I think as you were saying, you know, if the players don't buy into it, into that kind of football, then
it's a bit late now.
Then we did go down and down and down, and we had Gary Johnson for a bit, who was a good manager.
Yeah.
And then we had this sort of mad period. We went up again, we sort of got up to the third division or League Two or whatever it was called at the time, and now League One. And then we had this totally insane time when we got Claude Lorrain and Hervé Renard.
So Claude Lorrain, who's the manager of Cameroon.
I think so. And Hervé Renard's won AFCON a load of times.
I've got that on video, him being the manager of Cameroon. Manager of Cameroon in France. So I can back that up. When you were on the edge of the Premier League, did they rebuild the ground?
No.
Would that have been a Premier League ground? Or would you have had to play at, like, Norwich or something?
Oh, God, imagine. I don't know.
What was it? 92-93 is the first season of the Premier League. Mm. So you would have been in the first Premier League.
Yeah. Yeah, we would have been on that live, and you know, like the Simple Minds advert, flag. Yeah. What, you know, Dion Dublin would have been doing bench press next to Warren Barton. We'd have had that moment. It is, you know, like football is about hope, right? Isn't it? And hope and joy. And they gave us so much hope. And it is sort of sad to think, I mean, it's sad to think it won't happen again unless, you know, like Bournemouth have got a lot of money, right? Because they were going to go out of League Two. And they are, it's a beautiful story, but even still, they bankrolled as well as having Eddie Howe, et cetera, to get up to where they've got to. But you have to hold on to that dream that one day it might happen again.
Did you feel positive towards Dion and Beck after? Like, did you follow Dion Dublin as he's a Cambridge?
My national lottery numbers were made up of the squad numbers of former Cambridge players who were in the Premier League. So I had three.
You only picked three numbers.
So we had, and I'd double the number if there were two 21s. One was Lee Philpott. I can't remember the other was. Maybe it was Rowett. I'd have three for Kimball, 19 for Dion. I can't remember who the players were. I think if you sell your, if you sell players on, you're so proud of them.
Like, it's strange to hear you as lower league fans be proud of players who have left. If someone leaves West Ham, like, I'm still bitter about Joe Cole. I don't feel I could ever be like that about former players. No. But that, I think that's the peculiar thing about...
Mark Joseph went to Peterborough, and I will not mention his name without spitting on the floor. But that aside, you know, Philly Boots. I think you really feel that. I mean, it's an extension of the one of your own, right? Of Spurs fans loving Harry Kane. Because you are aware that... If they are going to achieve greatness, they have to go.
Yeah.
Right?
You understand.
Yeah.
I've got another Cambridge 90s question.
Okay.
Tom Youngs, right, who is a Championship manager 97-98 legend. What was he like? Was he forward, right, left, centre? Was he a forward, right, left, centre?
He was like a little number 10. And I was on a boat in the Great Barrier Reef in 1997-98. 98, my gap year. And doing one of those, you know, doing a diving course. And a really tall Norwegian man said to me, "Is Tom Youngs as good in real life?" He was a really lovely footballer, actually. And this was sort of after the John Beck year, so we had players who could play football. I don't think he was quite how Championship manager created him.
Yeah. Can I ask you another Cambridge question from the 90s?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Carlo Corazon.
Oh, Carlo Corazon.
So, Carlo Corazon.
It's 1 million Carlo.
Yeah, so we had him at Plymouth after you.
Yeah.
Was he as heroic for you as he was for us?
So,
to fill you in, he was a Canadian centre forward. So Neil Warnock had him at Plymouth.
Yeah.
And he just felt so kind of otherworldly.
Exotic. He's got a Z in his surname. Whenever you see that in the lower league, I get excited, now.
So really? I think he was playing in... arguably my favourite ever Cambridge United game, which was in the late 90s. We played Cardiff City and David Ellery was the referee, and they had three players sent off, Cardiff, including one for deliberate handball on the line, and the final score was Cambridge United 0, Cardiff City 0. They had eight. Honestly, if you see 11 against 8, it's so ridiculous.
That must be amazing.
So we missed the penalty. The penalty was saved and the rebound was saved. I don't know if Carlo took the penalty, but there was definitely... I'm sure he was on the pitch, but it was like It was absolutely hilarious. And you have to find there is a Radio Cardiff commentary, and it is a bit at the end. Is it a bit like that?
I've heard this.
It is a bit like
it's like they've won the
Maggie
league.
Thatcher, you know, it's like that Norway one. Yeah. It's like you took one hell of a beating. It is, but like it's it was such an amazing game.
We're in the third minute of injury time after 2 minutes were signalled. Faber had gone down. Butler turns. It's a shot. Oh, and Holworth saves. And it's there. It's all over. And Cardiff City celebrates as they draw 0-0 with 8 men. A remarkable performance. Cambridge United 0, Cardiff City 0. And we celebrate. We celebrate as if we've won the European Champions League. Cardiff City dramatically defend 0-0 with 8 men, and the players come to greet the City faithful. A great day in the history of Cardiff City.
You know, there is a masochism about being a lower league fan, and probably about being a West Ham fan, and now being a Man United fan. And you're just there on the terrace going, this is amazing. This is totally amazing. And you know those, there's that company that make those CFAX mugs?
Yeah.
And they asked me for one, and I have Cambridge nil, Cardiff nil. It's not a big seller in there, I'll be honest. But it's sort of, that encapsulates what being a lower league fan is.
You're one of those few people, the timings of your life and your team fell perfectly. So we all feel nostalgic about our childhood. But for you, the best period to be a Cambridge fan was the period when you first became a Cambridge fan.
Which gave you a full sense of what football was, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really good that I had 2 years of it being sort of quite boring.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is now. Yeah. I've got to talk about the goals videos that came out in the 90s for Cambridge United.
Yeah.
The production values were better than the ones that I made myself at home, but only just. And in 91, so the year we won the third division and got to the quarterfinals against Arsenal, the commentator was a man called Owen Nurse. He must have been about 13 or 14. And his voice broke halfway through the season. So 1 week he's like, it's a goal for Cambridge.
So you got a
John
kid,
Taylor.
A kid commentating on your goal.
Honestly, the next week he's like, corner for Cambridge. Completely unreferenced. Total genius.
Oh, wow. If anyone's got them.
Speaking of those compilation videos, like when I wanted to work in TV, a friend of my mum's had an old tape-to-tape editing machine that he gave me to practice on. So I thought, I was obsessed with like the montage videos that you make at the end of the season, and those goals videos. And when my friend's dad used to film all of our under-10s and under-11s games on the camcorder, so I decided to make like my own like compilation of our under-11s football team. But I was just a right back. I was like a sort of Danny Mills type. So there was a real lack of highlights of me. So I put one where I gave away like a penalty. There would be me like kicking out for a throw-in. To pad it out, there was a player I really didn't like on the team. So I would find bits where he'd fucked up, or like he'd misplaced passes, and like I would intercut it with mine. And I put a soundtrack on it, and it was "This Is How We Do It" by Montel Jordan. I've still got that in the loft of my mum's somewhere.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I'd love to see that. What that Nick Hornby chapter, doesn't it mention that you'd play "I've Got a Lovely Bunch of Coconuts"?
Yes, or when we win a game.
Why?
We win, I don't know.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
At one point on this pod, you were doing unlikely footballing friendships.
Yeah.
The Nordoff Robbins footballer dinner. Yeah. They give an award, they give a sort of like Hall of Fame award. So, you know, I think Beckham's had it, Giggs had it. It was Arsene Wenger this year, and it was Pele. You know, lots of celebrations for Pele, blah, 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 blah. And then Richard Keys just goes, and of course, as everyone knows, one of Pele's greatest friends is Mick Hucknall. Right? And everybody nods, and I'm like,
whoa.
You know how Zach Morris stops Saved by the Bell? Right? I really want to. So then it says, and as everyone knows, and I don't know if I get this the right way round, Pele is the godfather to one of Mick Hucknall's children.
What?
And I'm like, what? And everyone's just nodding along, and they say, and obviously, Mick wouldn't miss this evening for the world. And then like a MIDI file of stars by Simply Red comes on, and Mick Hucknall comes on in winkle pickers and white jeans, and basically serenades Pele to stars, right? And everybody in the room is just taking this as completely normal. And I look to my like between me and Mick Hucknall singing to Pele, and Roy Hodgson and Ray Lewington just going, ah, from the stars. And I was just, you know, when you're just looking around, I just wanted somebody else to acknowledge that this was the strangest moment in the history of the world.
Wow.
Oh, it was totally tremendous.
I wonder what they talk about. I mean, there's obviously Mick Hucknall's a shagger and Pele was into Viagra, but I don't
that's not how you build a great friendship, is it?
He's got his dealer.
It's not the water cooler moment, isn't it? You know what I really love? Sex. Who can I ring? Pele.
Well, Max, it's been an absolute pleasure learning about Cambridge in the 90s.
I've really enjoyed it.
To end,
yeah,
we ask everyone, it was a decade when all the excitement for you was pre-1993, but what are 3 years? If you could travel back in time to January the 1st, 1990, and live it all again, would you?
Do I have to do exams?
Yeah, you have to do adolescence.
Oh.
Was adolescence worth...
I didn't mind adolescence. I just can't face studying for anything.
So you wouldn't swap that for almost getting into the Premier League.
But having just turned 40, I have just started getting, and it's really literally in the last 6 months, envious of 18-year-old boys who have all their hair, none of it is grey, and they've got all their life to live. And I've gone from being like, fucking kids, so annoying, to, shit.
I'd do anything.
So, yes. Okay. Yes, I would, yeah.
Max Rushton, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you to Max. That was a lovely chat. This is our last episode before Christmas, although we are releasing our special final quiz on when, Michael?
Well, Christmas Day is a little
Christmas
treat.
Day.
Yeah.
I wonder, can we see how many listens we get on Christmas Day?
Yeah, we can do that. Oh, we'll find out next series.
Bleak. Put us on while you're making the turkey.
Do you know what the quiz would be great for? That kind of dead period around 6 p.m. on Christmas Day when all the presents are open, like the excitement is kind of lulling.
I agree.
You can sit back into your drawing room, put this on and play along with the quiz. Yeah.
There we go. Right.
Okay, it's time for the ratings and review section of the podcast. We've asked you this series to leave a review on iTunes in the style of some Steve Bruce fan fiction. Doesn't need to be 5 stars, but it helps. And every week we pick a winner. And if we pick you, you win, Michael.
You win one of our lovely Lettersford Town mugs.
Yes, indeed. And our winner this week is on iTunes, Bristol Homer, who posted this with the title Holding Role. My tough tackling midfield enforcer Aaron Corgroves had mysteriously been pushed down a hill, hence the clever title of this book, suffering a fatal metatarsal fracture. This was all I needed, I ruled. With my reserve keeper having been hit by sniper fire during a recent match, he always has been vulnerable to shots from range, I'd quipped to Peter Penrice. Not to mention the ongoing roadworks on the M62. Suddenly, there was a loud, repetitive thumping noise. There was no mistaking that sound, one I knew all too well. Someone was knocking on the door. I opened it. Who are you? I asked, knowing all too well who that idiot was. Gary Pallister from Mulcaster Morning Sport, the idiot replied. Steve Barnes, Mulcaster United in England, he asked, like an idiot. I was never capped, I retorted, despite having won the Champions League and scoring a hat-trick in the final. I hear you Teutonically trained holding player has been murdered, he said. The German retriever, I replied. I use this gag on a near daily basis, always getting big laughs, but Pallister wasn't to know that. But how could he know? The only person I told about the attack was my PA, who I trusted to a tea. No milk, 5 sugars. You're really grinding my gears, I said casually. Unlike my Jag, where the handling is beyond reproach. I wish I could say the same about my now very ex-reserve keeper. I've seen your clutch control, laughed Pallister. I bet he'd been a student and never done a hard day's work in his life. Unlike me, who one season played in excess of 40 football matches. He'd fallen right into my trap. The Jags' performance has only dipped below its normal flawless performance level since the morning's car chase. So that's you, who has been pursuing me in the far inferior Mercedes, I shouted. Pallister pulled a sawn-off M16 assault rifle from his sock, Umbro. So there was only one thing for it. recreating my famous header against Schaufeld Tuesday. I ran, jumped, and nutted him squarely in the face. It may not have been a title winner, but it was twice as satisfying. Then, using my old penalty-taking technique, I prioritised precision over power and side-footed him straight in the Adidas Tangos. That 114 pages where I went on a wild goose chase, accidentally joining the Foreign Legion, had been a complete waste of time after all, I reflected at the end.
Very good. Lovely. Very good.
Astonishing, Bristol Homer. You've won a mug. Much deserved.
Much deserved. Right. The quiz, Michael.
Yeah, as always, it's the 90s football quiz to play at the end of the show. The winner gets to pick which song plays out. The scores are 4-2 to Chris. He's won the series, so Josh is just playing for pride here. The matching question is Arsenal versus Newcastle United, the 1998 FA Cup final. Arsenal won 2-0.
Yeah.
Josh, as the current loser, would you like to pick
Anelka
first?
Anelka played. Yeah. I think he scored.
Correct.
Pavel Cernicek.
Oh, my God.
Incorrect.
Oh! What? Is that the game over? Oh, no, you get life.
He gets an extra life.
Shearer? Alan? Surely.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mark Overmars?
Correct.
Christopher Ray?
Correct.
A starting berth.
He started, yeah.
Rob Lee?
Correct.
The goalie. One or two, isn't it, in Arsenal? I've just got a feeling. Did they win the league that year?
Yes.
Yeah. Tony Adams?
Correct.
I could have a guess at the goalie.
Yeah. I'll have the other one then if you're wrong. Oh, it won't matter if you're wrong. Yeah. I've won.
Let's I'm going to go big. West Ham actually got knocked out of the quarterfinals of that FA Cup to Arsenal, and in goal that day was Alex Meninga.
Gone big, but has he flown too close to the sun?
Well, the thing with that is just before the World Cup, which David Seaman did play in.
Mm. Oh, yeah. It's a very, very good point. That quarterfinal would have been in March. This is May now.
Sometimes you've got to swing for the fences, Skull. But sometimes you miss.
Ah!
It was David Seaman.
Ah!
Unfortunate. So the teams were Arsenal, David Seaman, Lee Dixon, Tony Adams, Martin Keown, Nigel Winterburn. The classic back five. I can't believe no one went for all those. Yeah. In midfield, Ray Parlour, Patrick Vieira, Emmanuel Petit, Mark Overmars. Oh, up front, team, Christopher Ray, Nicholas Anelka. Newcastle in goal was Shea Given, and Warren Barton, Steve Howie, Nikos Dabizas, Stuart Pearce, Robert Lee, David Batty, Gary Speed, Alessandro Pistone, Tamori Ketsbayar, and Alan Shearer.
Tamori Ketsbayar. That's a good team,
That that the quiz for this episode felt a bit like an end of season game.
Yeah, yeah. There's not enough at stake, was there?
Dead rubber. There was a third place playoff, that one.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think since it's Christmas, there's only one 90s Christmas song. Let's do Stay Another Day by E17.
Oh, I thought you were going to say All I Want for Christmas by Mariah Carey.
Yeah, I could have actually. So there is two, but we're going to stick with Stay Another Day. Thank you for listening. Our Christmas quiz episode is out on Christmas Day with Tom Parry. We will see you then and then for a brand new series early next year. If you want to get some tickets to our live show, go on to the Salford Lowry website and we are there next November.
Good to know, especially if you're panicking for a last minute Christmas gift.
Baby, if you got to go away, don't think I could take the pain. Won't you stay another day? Oh, don't leave me alone like this. Don't you say it's the final kiss. Won't you stay another day?